1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name is John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program will preview the Bears-Buccaneers game coming up in just a moment, plus a brand new interview today with Todd Furman from Outkick, CBS Sports, and Beth the Board. We talk with him about some good betting advice for this weekend, Bears-Packers, Bears-Buccaneers, his career, and more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. I want to start today with this question. Is this the week the Bears finally unleash Justin Fields? You'd love to think yes. Facing Tampa Bay, not the best defense, good offense. Could be a shootout of a game. So why do I have the feeling that it won't happen? Maybe it's the pessimist in me. The Bears are at 3-3. They've been back and forth all year. Matt Nagy's fighting for his job. Justin Fields is fighting to prove he deserves to be here. And you go up against Tom Brady, a great offense, an okay defense in Tampa Bay. I don't know, to me, all the ingredients are there for a big day for Justin Fields. Seriously, even if they lose, I could see it. 350 passing yards, couple of touchdowns, rushing touchdown. It's possible. This would be a great environment to do it. But remember, who's the head coach? Who's calling plays? Who is limiting Justin Fields' skill set? There's your answer. From an outside perspective, I think this is the week to show off Justin Fields. You'll have no other choice. If you're dead set on winning this game, you need Justin Fields to be 100%. You are not going to beat the Buccaneers scoring 14 points. Not going to happen. You need production from your quarterback. No, I'm not blaming Justin Fields. I'm saying unleash him. Let him be himself. If there's one week where you want to do it, it's this one. You are not going to beat Tom Brady throwing for 150 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Sorry. Not going to happen. This is the perfect storm for the Bears to finally say, you know what? Let's let him play and see what happens. Because on the off chance that they actually win this game, that's a huge upset. It signifies that Fields is somewhat NFL ready. And who knows where the Bears could go. The Bears already failed a big test last week. Had they beaten the Packers, I would have been sold. They could have been 4-2, top of the division, beaten their rival, Aaron Rodgers, with Justin Fields and Bill Lazor, Matt Nagy, the whole crew. That was a big test. Honestly, a win there could have saved Matt Nagy's job. Now he's still on the chopping block. I'm not expecting a win for the Bears here. But personally, I want to see Justin Fields play. Legitimately. Not, oh, throw the ball 10, 15 times, 150 yards. No, I want to see him actually make plays. Cut him loose. Let him be himself. And at this point, let him call plays. You are going into Tampa Bay with absolutely nothing to lose. The Bears have nothing to lose here. You're facing a 5-1 team, Super Bowl reigning champion, Tom Brady. Nothing to lose. Cut him loose. Let him play. If there's one weekend where you really want to do it, it's this one. Trust me. What's the worst that's going to happen? Seriously, what? He's going to throw 3 picks? Lose the game for the Bears? So be it. You are not going to beat the Buccaneers scoring 14 points a game. This is a game where you need to take risks, shots downfield. Can't play conservative here. Can't be a wimp and worry, oh, what's going to happen? No! Let them loose. Play. The Bears' defense has been fine, but if they couldn't contain Aaron Rodgers and they gave up 24 points, what makes you think they're going to contain Tom Brady? And not just Tom Brady. 3 good receivers. 3. And a decent enough running game. Fournette and Jones. Godwin, Brown, Evans. Good luck. The Bucs right now, all 3 of those guys are on pace for 1,000 yards. All 3 of them on pace for 1,000 yards. The Bears have no secondary. Eddie Jackson can't make a tackle. They're going to put up at least 30 points. And if the Bears want a chance to win or stay in the game, I'm sorry, you got to cut them loose. You got to make plays. A 10-minute drive downfield? No, it's not going to get it done. A 15-play, 80-yard drive. No, that's not going to work here. We need to see explosiveness from this offense. Can't be seeing conservative play. Khalil Herbert is going to factor into this one. Great game last week. The run game is going to be important. I'm not saying don't run the football. The run game is not going to cover 80 yards in 2 minutes. Not going to help you when you really need a big score. I'm not saying abandon the run game. I'm happy. That's the one thing I could say good about this offense. The Bears have done a great job at going back to their roots, prioritizing the run game, being better. That's been great. But everything else has been a problem. A big problem. They need to prioritize explosion on offense. Can't be prioritizing 3-yard run, 5-yard pass, wide receiver screen. Last time I checked, Justin Fields is supposed to have this great arm. Supposed to be a great pocket passer, too. And let him be that. Don't limit him. In fact, stop limiting him. I'll tell you this much, it's pretty damn annoying to see that every week. It just seems like he's being held back, you know? Seems like he's being told, hey, now watch it, rookie. Don't do that. Don't do this. And you let the guy be himself. So what if he throws the ball 50 yards and it's incomplete? Who cares? I'd rather see a shot downfield than a risk taken, a roll of the dice. That's the only way you're going to beat the Bucs. You need to roll the dice this weekend. It's not going to be all about, oh, conservative gameplay. No. And if you limit Justin Fields again and keep doing it, number one, he won't develop, and number two, you're not going to win. We've talked about this all year. It's not about the wins and losses. I agree. We're all in agreement on that, but you know what? You still have to develop Fields. I'd rather him throw for 350 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, lose, fine by me. But I want to see some numbers now, some production. Look, like it or not, I'm just going to say it, there has been no production from him yet. Not his fault, but that's the truth. You could sit here and say he had a nice throw here and there, and that's fine, he has. But overall, numerically, statistically, look at the numbers. There's been nothing. Whose fault is it? Not his. He's demonstrated he can throw the ball downfield. He can make plays. He can run. No, it's play calling. Something's got to give. You're not going to win against Tampa by being conservative, and you're not going to win many games in general by following this same framework. Look, they beat Las Vegas for other reasons, which we know about. John Gruden. That's why they won that game. And they played a good defense. Did a good job. Stopped Derek Carr. Great. But as we saw last weekend, as we've seen in prior weekends, this defense isn't always there. And 24 points to Aaron Rodgers, not bad. But you got to score more than 14 offensively. Justin Fields was brought in to see an uptick in numbers. Right, he wasn't brought here to be Mitch Trubisky. He wasn't brought here to be Andy Dalton. Everybody said he's better, and he is. Intangible-wise, body-wise, yes. Why aren't the numbers there? Because he's not being given a chance. That's the problem. Give the kid a damn chance already. And look, I get it. You're a coach. You're worried about him. Young guy, rookie quarterback, how's he going to do? He's not fundamentally sound yet. I'm scared. I get it. What did I say last time? If you're that worried about him, don't freaking play him. If you're that concerned about Justin Fields, don't play him. But you've admitted, everybody else has admitted, I've even admitted, he's not a bad quarterback. And he's a rookie. We don't know what he's about. And we won't know unless we see some sort of commitment. So commit. Please, commit. I'm sick of seeing 150 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Sorry, I am. I wasn't told that's what Justin Fields would do. I was told explosive, Patrick Mahomes-like, 300 yards. Touchdowns, galore, no picks, accurate. We haven't seen it, and it's not his fault. He's being limited on purpose as to what he could and can't do. That's not going to work. That is not sustainable long-term. Not only for this team and their wins, but for his development. This season is about development. Play the guy. Come on. They're not going to win. They're not going to win if that's the way they play. They're not going to win being conservative. They're not going to win telling Justin Fields, oh, 200 yards max for you and that's it. You know, they did that week one, Andy Dalton. No touchdowns, one pick, 207 yards. They lost in Los Angeles. Everybody came for his head. We haven't seen anything different with Fields. Again, an indictment on the coaching staff and play calling. Justin Fields has way more upside than Andy Dalton, but the numbers are the same. Why the hell is that happening? And when you face the GOAT, Tampa, reigning Super Bowl champion in Tampa, you are not going to win throwing the ball 150 yards. Sorry. Hate to break it to you. It's the truth. You have got to let him loose here. This is literally the perfect time to do it. Let him loose. Let him play. I'd rather him throw three picks and a 300 yards and a loss than 150 yards, one touchdown, one pick, and close loss. We need to see development here. What are we waiting for? Hey, this is game four now for him. We need to see something. And yes, you could argue, oh, it's only three games, John. Don't freak out. But we should see some difference, right? I'm not crazy here, am I? Shouldn't we see some sort of uptick? Just a small one. It's been three games of the same. And don't tell me he's gotten better. It's all been the same. The Browns game was horrible. Not his fault. These past 2 weeks have been, okay. Not his fault. Every week he's being told, don't do this, don't do that. Let him play. Everybody clamored for him to come in, and they all expected greatness right away. Isn't happening. His fault? No. could we see an unleash this weekend? An unleashing of Justin Fields. Tell you this much. In Tampa against Tom Brady, you're sure as hell not going to win with 14 points. 150 passing yards. It's just not going to work. So it's either you accept defeat already and don't even show up, or you give yourself a fighting chance while at the same time developing Fields to be who he's supposed to be. Stop coddling him. Tell him, hey, let it loose here. We have nothing to lose. Play your game. That's the perfect idea. And if you lose, you lose. If you win, well, hey, that's huge for Fields. Huge for this team. There isn't one problem or one issue with letting them lose this weekend. I can't see one. When I think of it, all I see are benefits to doing it. Will the Bears do it, though? Well, you tell me. You all know this organization. You tell me what the Bears are going to do. That's the shameful part. We were told he'd be developed. We were told he'd be worked on. We were told that Nagy's guy. Right? That was the big issue, right? He didn't like Mitch Trubisky. If he gets his own guy, it'll be different. It's been three games. I don't see many differences. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Todd Furman comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zaglula, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the host of the Bet the Board podcast and a sports betting analyst for CBS Sports and Outkick. Please welcome Todd Furman to the program. Todd, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing very well, John. Thanks for inviting me back on the show. Hopefully I didn't embarrass myself in previous iterations and some of the discussions we've had. I know it's not exactly the best time of year to be a Chicago sports fan, but we'll see. As long as you guys don't boo me on this show like Blackhawks fans have done for Jeremy Colleton in the early portion of the season, we're making a step in the right direction.
What was your reaction to the Bears game on Sunday?
I think it's a team that needs an offensive identity. I know you've been pretty outspoken with some of your criticism for Matt Nagy, and he was expected to be this quarterback whisperer and a disciple of the Andy Reid coaching tree. And you just haven't seen any of that inventive capabilities out there. I mean, when you have a running back that's carrying the rock and albeit a third string back like Khalil Herbert going for nearly 100 yards, you have to get more out of a passing attack against the Green Bay defense that, let's not kid ourselves, doesn't really provide that formidable a pass rush. Down a couple of key cogs there. The secondary is far from 100%. And if you can only generate 14 points in your own building against the team that's owned you, it's not exactly a ringing endorsement for where the Bears are going offensively. I know I haven't been exactly the most popular individual for some of my criticism of Justin Fields and what my expectations were for what he could be as an NFL starting quarterback, but I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think you have to give a rookie quarterback time to learn to process at this level, but he's not being done any favors by this coaching staff, at least through the early going.
How do you think he's done so far statistically?
You know what? I've seen flashes. I'd like to see his legs become a little bit more of a valuable element. I don't think the Bears have the weapons that he's grown accustomed to at Ohio State where he can be a pocket passer. I think one of the criticisms I had when you watched him step up in class during his time in Columbus, that when he couldn't anticipate some of the throws, he couldn't throw his receivers open, and you don't get the same separation from even an Allen Robinson or Darnell Mooney in the National Football League like you do Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson when you're going up against teams like Akron and other programs. I mean, you put on the tape from the Big Ten Championship where he had to go head-to-head with an NFL caliber corner and Greg Newsome in Northwestern, and the deep balls just weren't there. So I think this is something that he's got to be proactive about. I think it's on the coaching staff to try and work with him. And you'll like to see him take the next steps over the latter portion of this season's schedule and obviously make that major jump, knowing he's going to be the franchise quarterback going into season two.
What's the next step look like for you? Like, where do you want him to be by the end of this season?
You know, I just want him to seem more comfortable and confident, be able to go through some of those progressions and be able to utilize the middle of the field. I mean, to be honest, we look at a quarterback back like Lamar Jackson. And if Baltimore was ready to cut bait there, look how long it's taken him to kind of perfect some of the touch and show that true dual threat ability. So I think we see quarterbacks like Justin Herbert who go out there and really dazzle in their first season. And that creates an unrealistic expectation for what you're going to get from a quarterback who's accustomed to operating out of the spread, who's had superior athletes during his time in college. We know the talent gap of the National Football League isn't really that wide from team one to team 32. So you have to do the little things there. You have to be able to extend plays. You have to be able to take the running lanes when they're there. And I think you have to try and keep a pretty open mind because Bears fans watching him in the preseason, I really believe thought he would, they thought that he was going to come in and throw for 300 yards and run for 100 every time he got under center. And we know that's just not the case.
Are you surprised by the difference in personnel around him? Like you mentioned, at Ohio State, it's a much different game than the NFL. It's much different for the Bears now with the guys they have around him. Do you think that's been an issue for his development too?
There's no doubt that it's been a challenge. But I think the biggest thing, and this isn't exactly splitting the atom as far as Bears fans are concerned, the offensive line is a joke. So, I mean, no quarterback out there, regardless of his pedigree or mobility, was going to have a ton of success operating behind that group. The reality, though, I've been actually pleasantly surprised with the Bears' commitment to the ground game. And before David Montgomery was hurt, you saw him be extremely effective running between the tackles. So maybe it's a little bit more play-action element to try and freeze those linebackers and be able to attack at the second level. But I think it's a week-by-week type approach. And, you know, this week is going to be a great indication because you're going up against the Tampa Bay defensive front that has plenty of vulnerabilities in its defensive backfield. But if the Bears think they're going to be able to run the ball or at least commit to running it, they're only diluting themselves. So it's got to be Fields' arm and his ability to take advantage of some of man coverage on the outside that allow the Bears to be competitive as nearly a two-touchdown underdog.
Yeah, what do you think of that game? The Bears are already double digits as an underdog. Do you think they could cover?
I mean, they've taken some money, and I can understand why against the Tampa side that hasn't exactly been dominant in terms of putting away inferior foes. This is a big price tag. When you consider that Tampa was right around this same price against the Atlanta Falcons, and the Bears are a better football team at this point right now. The problem being is that Tampa has played with such a quick tempo, relatively speaking, that they've been able to maximize some of their personnel advantages. They haven't hesitated when the opportunity has been there to continue piling on, especially in their home games. And I don't think that 28-22 scoreline against Philadelphia was indicative of how the game went. Anyone who watched realized that if Bruce Arians elects to go for it on fourth and short, Tampa covers, they win the game by double digits, and it's a much different storyline than I think scoreboard watchers were able to glean from that contest. If it got to 14, I could see making a value bet on the Bears, but I'd be lying if I said I liked the matchup, knowing that it was essentially Fields needing to win this game with his arm, something that we haven't seen enough of through his first couple starts.
Todd Berman here on Sports Talk Chicago. Todd, what did you think of Aaron Rodgers' comments about the Bears?
I think he was pretty honest and candid given what he's been able to accomplish during his career. I think the record now is 20-7 straight up or something close to it. He's improved his record at Soldier Field to 11-3 straight up and 11-3 against the number. I mean, this is a rivalry, or at least theoretically it's supposed to be one of the biggest rivalries. Unfortunately for Bears fans, they've been at a quarterback disadvantage from when Brett Favre handed the baton to Aaron Rodgers. It's a little bit different from when the Bears were beating up on the Packers when I was a kid growing up in Chicago throughout the 90s. And it was, you know, Don Majakowski, the magic man, trying to steal a win for the underdog Packers. I think it really sits in the craw of Bears fans. But Aaron Rodgers was just speaking the truth, sharing what we already know to be the case, that as long as AR-12 is under center in Green Bay, it puts the Bears behind the eight ball in terms of trying to find a way to bridge that gap against one of their most bitter NFC North rivals.
Do you think Justin Fields could be the guy to finally break that mold and beat the Packers regularly, like in the future?
You know, I'm not going to say it's all on Fields. I think the bigger question will be, what does Green Bay's quarterback situation look like? Do they truly believe that Jordan Love is going to be the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers? Way too early to tell. We haven't seen him perform at the highest level. You've got glimpses during the course of preseason. The problem the Packers always run into is it's not the most attractive destination for free agents, nor have they been willing to spend. So much of what they do has to be through building through the draft. And Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams have masked a lot of their deficiencies over the last couple of years. Once that tandem is potentially gone, will Green Bay be able to continue along the trajectory that they've been on as one of the front runners in the NFC? I do think you'll see a slight changing of the guard. And for Bears fans, I know that'll give them a little bit of peace of mind, but it's as much about Fields' maturation as a franchise quarterback there as it is trying to glean what Green Bay will look like offensively once they see the end of an era.
Where do you see the rest of the NFC North going this year? How do you see it playing out?
I think the Lions are a team in complete disarray. And if you read between the tea leaves for what Dan Campbell had to say, the idea that David Blough could be taking over at some point in the season has to be a little scary for the boys up there in the Motor City. We know that they've been racked with injuries in their defensive backfield and everywhere else. I mean, this is a true breakdown and rebuild. So I think the Lions ceiling at max, maybe 2 wins, and I'm not quite sure they even get there. Minnesota is a team that I was bullish on coming into the season, and I think they're now finally starting to live up to the expectations. It's not a stretch to say this team with a made field goal and a call, if, you know, went the right way in overtime against the Cincinnati Bengals, is suddenly 5-1 and maybe the class of this division, but their schedule coming up isn't exactly the easiest by any stretch of the imagination. They haven't shown that killer instinct late in games. And when you rack up 570 yards on the road against Carolina, it shouldn't require a 34-28 overtime victory. But I do think this defense, which was a question mark coming in, is significantly better. The secondary appears to be much more buttoned up, and I think it's one of the more underrated defensive lines in the entire NFC.
Do you still think the Packers win the division?
From a price standpoint, I would be making a case for the Vikings. Do I think the Packers remain atop the heap? Yes, because their schedule is much more favorable. Of course, I know they play 2 games with the Minnesota Vikings, so that can change the dynamic there. But I think the Vikings will have their hands full. I think from a talent standpoint, top to bottom, I like the Vikings roster a little bit better. I just don't think you can overcome giving away games in the National Football League and expect to be atop your division, regardless of what league you play in.
Do you think the Bears stand 7.5 on their win total? Could they end up doing better than that?
You know what? It's so tough to try and tell, because I think the defense has regressed a little bit. It's not nearly as dominant as what we've seen in the past. And we need to see the offense take that next step. So for me, when I look at the Bears, I thought that was a fair win total coming in. We all expected that we would see Fields sooner rather than later. And there's always a chance that maybe that light goes off and we see that transcendent performance that goes, hey, look, this is the franchise guy that we thought we had. All of a sudden, everything's clicking. He's on the same page as the receivers, and he's able to get into a rhythm with Matt Nagy and Bill Lazor to try and figure out how you can really take the lid off of opposing defenses and allow this group to throw for more than 150 yards every single Sunday they're out there and at least put up more than 21 points to have a puncher's chance.
Todd Berman here on Sports Talk Chicago. Todd, when's the last time you've seen 3 late NFL games with spreads above 10?
It's been a while, and I can tell you from an intrigue standpoint, there's not a whole lot to get excited about. Rams-Lions won't have me glued to the edge of my seat. Bears-Bucks probably won't either, and it definitely won't be the Cardinals and Texans. You look at those 4th trio of games, the only one that's got a spread right around a field goal is, of course, the Raiders and Eagles. I'm curious, though, to see how Arizona handles a bit of prosperity. I mean, this is the ultimate letdown spot. I mean, they should be able to go out there and play their C game against the Houston Texans side, but it's a little bit different going out there and winning a football game versus dominating your opponent as a 17.5-point favorite in this spot. So I think this is the perfect Sunday afternoon that maybe you carve out a little bit of time to see the family, which you normally can't do during the fall, because I don't think all of these games are going to be must-see TV given the high level of competitiveness, you know, we've seen through the first 5-6 weeks as it pertains to games boiling down to last-second field goals or even going over. Overtime. I think there are 11 such games so far.
Cliff Kingsbury won't be there, or at least as of right now. Does that affect anything regarding that line?
You know, it changes things a little bit. I have to give the Cardinals a ton of credit. They didn't appear to miss a beat on the road at Cleveland. It was as much the Browns' self-inflicted wounds, though. As we know, Baker Mayfield won't go on Thursday night dealing with the non-throwing shoulder injury. The cluster injuries that the Browns had to try and overcome apparently were way too much, and they were done in by a couple of calls. You know, some ticky-tack fouls early on in that game, which sealed their fate before you even got to the end of the first quarter. With a defensive-minded head coach in Vance Joseph, you have to believe that if they're up 17 to 21 points, he could take his pedal, his foot off the accelerator, and suddenly Houston finds a way to sneak in the back door. That's always the risk you run in the National Football League when you're talking about numbers this large. But, of course, we saw earlier this year where Houston went on the road to Buffalo, similar point spread. And that dynamic was nowhere close as Buffalo was able to curb stomp him to the tune of about 40-0.
What about Raiders-Eagles? I saw Las Vegas only up by 2.5 points. Do you buy that spread?
I do. I think, you know, it's interesting to see how the Raiders are able to run it back in a wake of a very emotional performance against a divisional foe. I have to give Rick Bisaccia a ton of credit. In the face of adversity, the Raiders were the dominant team for the better part of three quarters. The final score not indicative of how much command they actually had in that particular football game. But Philadelphia comes in, you know, hopefully rejuvenated, getting Lane Johnson back along their offensive line, some extra time to prepare. And Jalen Hurts can be a little bit of a matchup problem for a Raiders defense that's done a good job getting after the quarterback. But when you're talking about contending with an agile quarterback, one that can extend plays and even take off and become a legitimate running threat, you know, my strong lean is towards Philadelphia as a 3-point road underdog in this particular spot, just because I want to see how the Raiders are able to handle prosperity. Keep in mind, they're only a week removed from being dominated by the Bears and only mustering 9 points in that pathetic effort.
What's a dark horse bet you're looking at for this weekend?
You know, when you go through, a game I'm fascinated to watch would be Kansas City and Tennessee. Let's see if Kansas City's defense that showed very well against Washington in the second half was a sign of things to come. There's no doubt that Kansas City would love to show, hey, look, Buffalo dominated us in our building. The Titans took care of them and theirs. We're going to go on the road and prove that you shouldn't forget about us, especially knowing that the Chargers dropped the game going into their bye week. So I'm not sure there's a ton of betting value to be gleaned from that particular spot. But no doubt that's a game worth watching. When you're looking to try and find a little bit of value, I think this Bengals-Ravens game actually makes a whole lot of sense to go under the total, essentially in the first half. These are two teams that don't play all that quickly. The Bengals have been a pleasant surprise on the defensive side. And when you look at their ability to stop the run, I think it'll make Baltimore a little bit more of a passing attack. And when you're talking about Baltimore, I think their defense, especially with how they like to heat up opposing quarterbacks, will have some success against a Bengals offensive line that really shouldn't leave anybody brimming with confidence, at least Joe Burrow at this current juncture.
Do you have a best long shot bet or something that's a bit out there that you think could provide some good value this weekend too?
You know what? Not a ton. And normally I would try and advocate for at least making a case for some of these double digit dogs. I don't think there's a real reason to run to the window and try and play what I call hero ball at this particular time. There are clear mismatches, and I don't think you're going to get one of these teams really laying down. Now, of course, when I say that, inevitably we get a game like we saw last year where the Rams knock off the Jets knock off the Rams, where the Rams were more than a 2-touchdown favorite. So, I mean, as you kind of go through the NFL board and look for a live underdog, you know, man, maybe you believe Washington turns the corner and from their defensive line can step up, but I think Green Bay getting healthier in the trenches probably neutralizes some of that threat. But if I was looking for one of those dogs of a touchdown or more, I think Washington would probably fit the bill, even though Green Bay has been extremely dominant from an against the spread standpoint and overall competency perspective when you're talking about them playing at Lambeau.
More to come with Todd Berman in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Todd Berman, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Todd, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, bet the board. Tell me about the expansion.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from a podcast that started off years ago just being, you know, one show a week on Thursdays for the National Football League into two shows on Mondays and Thursdays. A couple of years ago, we added a college football podcast on Wednesdays and felt this year it was time to kind of go one step further and put our ugly mugs on camera with the Bet the Board pregame show that's available every Friday afternoon at noon Eastern. Encourage folks to go to youtube.com, search Bet the Board, subscribe. That way you'll be alerted as soon as those shows come up. And the great part about that is it's given us the opportunity to bring in three of the most respected voices in the space as weekly contributors. You know, Warren Sharp, there's nobody who dissects some of the advanced analytics in the National Football League better than Warren does. From a college football standpoint, Brad Powers, well-known around Las Vegas and elsewhere for betting into opening numbers, especially at some of the casinos that are first to hang them. And, you know, it's not an uncommon occurrence for him to walk away with 40 to 45 bets by the time, you know, Sunday noon Eastern or noon Pacific rolls around. So Brad has been sharing some of his upgrades and downgrades each week. And of course, Bill Krakenberger, the crack man, I mean, probably the most respected voice in the sports betting space. You know, his moves are feared in sports books all over, and he's connected to some of the biggest betting groups out there. A lot of people were first introduced to Bill and what he brings to the table during the Showtime documentary Action. He puts out all sorts of great content. And for all of those guys to come on board, even in a limited capacity, you know, with 90-second to 2-minute cameos each every week, it just gives us another layer that most of the sports betting content platforms out there, whether they be radio show, digital, or even written, you know, can't match as far as expertise is concerned.
What's the plan forward moving forward? Do you expect more expansion coming up?
You know, it's a great question and one that we kind of grapple with all the time. We're obviously a very football centric platform. It's trying to figure out, you know, where we can find other avenues to go into. The biggest challenge in the gambling space is identifying like-minded individuals that share our perspective on things. As I'm sure you've seen, John, along with all of your viewers and listeners, the real challenge is a lot of folks these days are masquerading as experts in the sports betting space. And, you know, this isn't a dig at some of the folks out there, but I can find somebody on the street that can put together a picks column and claim they have an edge on 16 NFL games just by putting down, you know, a couple hundred words. But you have to dive a little bit deeper. And I think one of the big things, our brand isn't for everyone. It's trying to turn sports betting into a little bit more of an investment vehicle. And if we can make our listeners and viewers smarter each and every time we produce a bit of content, it means we're headed in the right direction. So whether it's the NBA, whether it's college basketball, the NHL, NASCAR, you know, we're always looking for talented individuals that we think can raise the overall profile of our brand. Because let's not kid ourselves, there are only so many hours in the day. And by the time football comes to an end, I'm not sure I'm up for putting in 14 to 16 hours of producing an hour podcast on 17 other sports, being able to convey that level of expertise and being honest and truthful with myself, saying that I've uncovered every stone to make anyone who tunes in that much smarter with the content we provide.
I'm not a sports betting expert, so you don't worry about that. That's why I have you on my show.
No, I won't throw you into that particular bucket. I always tell people, you know, I respect folks that want to be in and involved in the sports betting space, but authenticity is huge. So as long as you don't profess to know things that you actually don't, it's an all-inclusive space where we can always bring in, you know, more voices that want to kind of shine the spotlight on sports betting overall.
Tell me about Outkick, too. That's a new thing that's come up. That's a pretty cool opportunity. How'd that happen?
So in the wake of Fox Bet Live, which I was a contributor for the previous couple seasons, decided I want to explore some independent projects in anticipation of this football season, and have had a longstanding relationship with Clay going all the way back to his time as a local radio host in Nashville. I'd actually been a contributor for Outkick in its first couple of seasons. And we decided, hey, look, you know, let's try and recreate some of that chemistry and rapport and focus on the gambling space that continues to grow. So it's me telling Clay essentially that he's a dumbass more often than not, us trying to convey some level of expertise to an audience of all ability levels. And the most important thing for Clay that, you know, him and I discussed before, we said, hey, this is going to be sports betting. That's exactly where we're going to draw the line. We're not going to delve into some of the other more controversial topics that him and I, you know, oftentimes see diametrically opposed in those spaces. And we figured sports betting is where we can have a lot of fun. We can provide a distraction for folks. And that was going to be the best vehicle. As I've been pretty outspoken when it comes to, I know what I know when it comes to sports, and I stay away from what I don't know when it comes to politics and some of the other issues that are out there. I keep a lot of those things internalized and think we're all better off for it as a result.
You know, I'm curious, what prompted you to leave Fox Bet Live and to pursue the independent projects, like you said?
You know, it just got to a point, John, and Fox had always been great. They were in a family to me. I'd been with the network ever since they launched FS1 back in, I don't know, 2013 or 2014. They decided that they wanted to modify the format of Lock It In, then what became Fox Bet Live, and it wasn't going to be a daily program. And just thought, you know, there's so much more in the sports betting space that I wanted to see what might be out there on top of that. You know, left on good terms, still have a great relationship with Cousin Sal, with Alex Curry, who took over for Rachel Bennett as the host, Clay, of course, still on the show, and the executive team as well. And I think they understood that, hey, you know, every now and again, you have to go out there and see, you know, what's on that other side of the fence. And I encourage people, you know, whether it's sports betting, whether it's sports media, much like what you've done for yourself or any of the other professions out there, that if you believe in yourself and you're willing to make that investment and basically bet on your own abilities, that hard work will be rewarded. And I never rule out a return to Fox in some capacity one way or another. But at least for this season, it made a lot more sense to try and see what kind of avenues there were to explore and invest a lot more back into growing Bet the Board into a slightly more comprehensive and expansive brand than what we've had in the past.
And Todd, before we finish up today, last question, how often do you get a haircut?
It depends. During football season, it can be as infrequently as every 2+ months. As you can tell, you know, it's a little bit more cleaned up than what it was for anybody that turned into the pregame show last week. I think going in, I had the hockey lettuce flown out the back of my hat, and I was probably the middle of August. So we're talking about 9-10 weeks. The problem, John, is the girl I go to out here that's been cutting my hair for quite some time. She's only available on Sundays and Mondays. She works a very limited schedule. And as you know, in this business during football season, it's a little bit more difficult to get out of the home office. So I saw her earlier this week. We were able to carve out some time on Monday. She gave me a hard time, told me she was going to have to bust out the weed whacker. But it reminded me of when I grew out my hockey hair back in the, you know, college days, where I think I had one haircut inside of 6 months. You know, I had the Rick DiPietro style flow coming out the back. I'm just not sure, as a contributing member of sports media now, I can get away with that particular look.
Thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on. Best wishes with Bet the Board, Outkick, CBS, and I'm sure we'll talk again very soon. Really appreciate the time.
You got it, John. Thanks again for having me on, and continued success on your side of things as well. And maybe by the end of this football season, you'll be able to realize some of your ultimate goals, and you'll have a new head coach patrolling the sidelines at Soldier Field going forward in 2022 and beyond.
We can only hope. We can only hope at this point. Great talk there with Todd Furman, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Todd Furman himself, Matt Dubio, WCKG, Jim DeTalbert, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?